It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack on vacation here. We're doing the show anyway. Dub Irvin is our guest. He's from the folks at Wide Orbit, and he'll be telling us about virtualization, how they virtualize radio automation systems so you can run a whole bunch of them in a small but reliable package. That's coming up. Plus, Chris Tobin joins us from a rooftop in New Jersey here on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by the Telos Alliance and the new Omnia Volt audio processor. More processing power in one rack unit than others give you in three. By BSW, broadcast supply worldwide, where it's the June summer clearance. Save up to 54% at BSWUSA.com. And by Lavo and the new Ruby visual radio console. Ruby's a new kind of console for a new radio environment at Lavo.com/twert. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Glad to be here. And you can see I'm not in my usual office. I'm in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of East Tennessee near Gatlinburg. And we're just taking a little vacation here. But I couldn't miss this show for the world. Love it. Love talking to our guests here and just bringing the show to you. It really makes me happy. It's a good thing. Good place to be in life. And we love talking about radio technology, everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And we're going to talk about some subjects today that I'm just not so well versed on, but our guest is. So we're coming to you very shortly with that. Chris Tobin is normally with us. He is working to get online right now. As usual, Chris is out in some crazy location connected via some IP radios, maybe with a ketchup bottle. It's an inside joke if you watch the show very much, but hopefully Chris will be able to get back on with us. I think he was stymied by a Windows 10 issue. So we'll see if we can get Chris on shortly. We'll wait with bated breath and we'll see if he pops up. Our show is brought to you by three sponsors. You should know them by now. They are the Telos Alliance and the new Omnia Volt. Also BSW USA. That's broadcast supply worldwide at BSWUSA.com. And by Lavo. Go to Lavo.com/twert to have a look at their consoles there. We'll tell you more about all these things as we bring the show along. And you can see that I'm transmitting from a different place. As I said, is the Smoky Mountains behind me. In fact, the mountain that's right behind me, if you ever hike the Appalachian Trail, you will go right along that ridge at the top. It's the state line between Tennessee and North Carolina. So if you do hike the Appalachian Trail, be sure you wave and say hi, and maybe we'll be here on the deck. Let's go ahead and bring our guest in. I have known this guy for a long time, but haven't dealt with him a whole lot. And every time I have dealt with him, it's been pleasurable and a good experience. And, you know, he's a kind of get it done kind of guy. It's William Irvin from Wide Orbit in San Francisco. William, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Well, thank you very much, Kirk. It's definitely very nice to be with you today. And feel free to just call me Dub. People usually call me Dub after they get to know me. But when I introduce myself as Dub, everyone, you know, it's not a common name, so people usually misunderstand. So I usually just start by introducing myself as William and then say, just call me Dub. So just call me Dub, Kirk. And it's great to see you. You know, you and I both worked at Scott Studios. We both had the same job. I had it two people after you. And it's great to be a guest on your show today. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, and I think it's amazing that you have been with the company as it's moved. Take me just a second. You're with Wide Orbit now, and yes, I was there with Scott Studios, but there's been a couple of changes between Scott Studios in Dallas and Wide Orbit kind of nationwide. Take us through that step by step a little bit.
I even started before Scott Studios. I worked at Computer Concepts, which was arguably one of the very first automation companies. And I worked at their first customer, which was in West Virginia, and which is where I'm from. And so, but you know, Scott Studios was acquired by the company called DMARC, which was looking to do programmatic sales for radio. And they felt that it was important to have an automation footprint for that business to succeed. So we were acquired. And then, of course, as everyone knows, DMARC was acquired by Google. And Google really funded the development of a new automation system, which is now Wide Orbit Automation for Radio. And then in 2009, we were acquired by Wide Orbit. And here we are all these years later. So it's pretty great.
Wow. That is a lot. And a lot of our friends and colleagues and people in the radio business know them. People like my old friend, Brad Young, is on your staff. Also, Jim Hammond on your staff. Yep. Who else might I know that's on your staff?
John Anybody Hicks, else? Also in another alumna.
Oh, of course, John Hicks. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
I think he's from just so over that mountain back.
He's just he's relocated. He's moved back to South Carolina, which is where he and his wife are from, as so many of you know. And so he's there in the mountains as well in South Carolina. And then we have on the tech side, you know, that was the sales side. Then on the tech side, we have Francis Johnson and Jason Singletary, who've been with us for a really long time. Francis is an alumni of Scott Studios. So it's great. It's a little family, and so many of us are still together. Chris Mahan, who works in our support department in Dallas, is also an alumna of Scott Studios. So it's great. We have it's just a reinforcement of how small our industry is. And as you were saying, you and I, our paths have crossed so many times over the years, even though we haven't worked at the same company. It's, you know, we're an extended family in the radio industry, but at our automation business, it's the same thing, just on a smaller scale, and we're really grateful for that.
So we're going to be talking about subjects that I don't know enough about, and I guess a lot of our regular viewers and listeners, hopefully they're either know as little as I do or a little bit more than I do, and you're going to bring us up to speed on virtualization, also on remote operations, and maybe we're going to dream a little bit about cloud operations and how that works. All that's coming up. We've got three sponsors on the show, and I want to tell you all about one of them right now. At the Telus Alliance, and you guys know I work for the Telus Alliance. It says Telus right there, so I do have a little bias there. The Omnia division has this new audio processor. It's the Omnia Volt. Now, the Volt is, I guess you could call it, the successor to the Omnia One. But the Omnia Volt, people ask me, what's the difference between the Omnia Volt and the Omnia One? It's got a black front panel and a big red knob. Well, that's not the only differences. Let's put it this way. The Omnia One, and by the way, that's been, as far as we can tell, the most successful audio processor in world history. I don't know that I'm at liberty to tell you how many of them are out there, but it is in the tens of thousands. There's a bunch of Omnia Ones out there. Well, the Omnia Volt was developed after the Omnia 11 got developed, whereas the Omnia 1 was developed before the Omnia 11. So basically, some of the heritage that's in the Omnia 11, the good parts that we could take out of that and put into the Omnia Volt in a one-rack unit box, that's what's in the Omnia Volt. Plus, Frank Foti thought he'd get his hands dirty again, spent a lot of time on his train, a lot of thinking time, and came up with a brand new FM clipper that is just amazing in the way that it works. The loudness it gives you without distortion. So there's this new clipper in the Omnia Volt. So Cornelius Gould, you know, he's the senior algorithm developer at Omnia. He had a huge, well, he developed the GeForce software for the Omnia 11 platform. Well, his hand is certainly all over the Omnia Volt. So, hey, if you're a station like, hey, my small station's in Mississippi or American Samoa, or maybe you need a backup processor, or maybe you're in a medium market, but, you know, you're just not on top. You just can't lay out $15,000 for an audio processor. Do check out the Omnia Volt. It is has a list price of under $3,500. I'm sure your dealer can get it for you for whatever, you know, whatever discount they can get for you. And, I'd talk about some of the features here. It's got the usual mix of enhancers, bass enhancers, stereo enhancers, which only work when they need. It's got multi-band, of course, multi-bands of AGC and multi-bands of limiting. But some of the algorithms now, especially in the limiters, are just amazing and different than ever have been before. Plus, here's one of the things that's really cool about the Omnia Volt. It has a new feature called Quick Tweak. Now, Quick Tweak isn't just a simple less, more control. You're actually moving a whole lot of controls inside the box when you adjust Quick Tweak for more or less high-end or bass or density or clipping, loudness, that kind of thing. So Quick Tweak, first of all, pick your preset, then go to Quick Tweak and adjust it. And you know what? The chances are about 98.5% that you're going to be exactly where you want. And it'll make you feel like a genius, like a processing expert. The Quick Tweak feature, a whole bunch of effort went into that to figure out how can we make people feel really good, really fast about their station sound, and Quick Tweak is the feature. So check it out if you would. Go to telusalliance.com, click on Omnia, and then go to the page for the Omnia Volt.
it is going, I say it's going to do better than the Omnia One did. And that's going to be hard. That's would think that'd be hard to beat. We've got a video coming next week about the Omnia Volt, a little 2.5 minute video I put together about its features. It really explains a lot and does it very quickly and efficiently. So, check it out, the Omnia Volt. Thanks, Omnia, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Kind of sounds like Chris Tobin is back with us. Is he? Is Chris Tobin here? Maybe not. No. I see him. Chris, do we have you? Maybe. I don't hear any audio from Chris. We'll work on that. We'll be back to you. Okay. All right, we're here with Dub Irvin. Now, Dub, we're going to jump right into our topic of virtualization. And I appreciate you bringing this technology to us. Now, you know, a lot of us have heard of virtualization, but don't have a lot of hands-on experience with virtual machines. As we were talking earlier today, you know, I've seen big frames in the racks with blades in them. And, okay, I kind of get that, I guess. You could have one computer for each blade. And then I've seen other platforms, one that I think you guys are using, this FT server, where it's one box, but it's like two amazing computers inside that check on each other, right? Like the buddy system. So why don't you kind of start us out with why virtualization? What are the benefits of that for engineers and broadcasters? And then if you would, let's kind of get into exactly how that works, how that looks, how that sets up.
Sure, I'd be glad to. So firstly, what we might want to do is even start by defining what virtualization is. So that what is it? And virtualization is pretty simple. It's just the ability to run more than one instance of an operating system on a given computer. And so in this case, you know, we'll be talking about Windows today. But you know, that's not the only operating system that, you know, you can virtualize. So virtualization is simply running more than one instance of Windows on a given machine in our case. And there are a number of benefits to doing that. The most obvious is reducing the number of computers that you need for in your operation. So as you're thinking about rolling out a radio automation system, if you have 10 studios, traditionally you've needed 10 computers to one computer or maybe even more than one computer per studio. So, you know, for example, if you want to have an on-air machine and a separate voice tracking machine, or a backup machine in a given control room, you know, that's two or three computers right there. And so virtualization allows you to reduce the number of computers that you have. And then that reducing the number of computers has benefits as well. For example, you can reduce the amount of power that you need because you don't have many computers, you have fewer. And then, of course, the heat generation is reduced. The amount of rack space that you need is reduced, and it can reduce the cost after you get to a certain point. So those are really the main benefits of virtualization.
So as somebody who has used computers since, I guess, the early 1980s, and a Commodore 64 or a VIC 20, but I had a radio, I had an automation running on a Commodore 64, and it actually worked.
Yeah.
It ran an Instacart machine. How about that?
Yeah, I know.
A satellite music network and an Instacart all through a Commodore 64. But thinking about virtualization, the first thing that engineers like me think about who don't have a lot of hands-on is, well, I have a computer that gets pretty busy doing what it's doing. Now, maybe it's an underpowered computer. Maybe it was actually a refurb from 8 years ago. But the first thing I worry about, I'm not familiar with how much power you can get in a server class machine that you'd run virtualization on. Talk to me about when do you run out of steam in a CPU environment for running radio stations?
And that really depends. That depends on a couple of different things. At least in our experience, you want to think about the requirements of the software that you want to run on it. So there are a number of platforms that are available for virtualization. We're partial to VMware, although that's not the only good one that's available. So when you create these virtual machines, you specify the amount of the computer's resources that are allocated to each of the virtual machines. So that's how much of the computer's RAM, how much of the computer's processor is available. You can also allocate NICs to be accessible to it and USB ports, just to name a few items that can be made accessible to these VMs. So as you would think about so it really is driven by the software that you want to run on the virtual machines. So if you like, I could say, you know, in the wide orbit space, you know, we find that we can take a machine that's not that gold plated, not that powerful of a machine, and still run a fair number of radio stations on that machine. And at a certain, after a certain scale, that really means some significant savings on hardware.
So while we're still establishing the foundation here of how this works, in computer parlance, I've heard this word hypervisor. Personally, I don't have experience with that, but what's the hypervisor and what's the underlying VM virtual machine software? And I guess the hypervisor creates environments that each individual instance of the operating system thinks, hey, I'm the only one here. This is my world. Is that how it works?
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much how it works. And so so that's the technology that allows the different VMs to exist on the same hardware platform. And as I said, there's virtual machine. There's VMware, which is a platform that we really like. Microsoft has one called Virtual PC. There's another one that we like that's called Virtual Box. And so those are just three that that we can name.
So as a broadcast engineer, if I were to get a virtual machine environment from an automation company like Wide Orbit, and there's a couple others that offer it too, how much do I need to know about the virtual machine, the hypervisor, and all that stuff?
I don't think you need to know. In my opinion, you don't need to know a ton about it. You don't need to know anything more about it than you would know about your automation system. You know, an engineer or an IT staff in a radio station, you know, needs to have a pretty good understanding of their automation platform. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that the same. It's about the same for the virtual environment. You at least want to understand the basics of it. How it's configured and how the different components of the computer are allocated to the VMs. That's what I would suggest. Now, one of the things that we could also talk about in a couple of minutes or whenever you're ready are the different deployment models. There are two kind of deployment models. There's one you would call failure recovery and one you might call failure prevention. And they come at different levels of complexity, and in those cases, your level of understanding might need to be different.
Okay, so deployment models. This is kind of a new term for me in this regard. So I guess there's different combinations of hardware that would make sense. You said earlier that you can run a virtual machine, several of them, on a machine that wasn't actually a gold-plated machine. But I've seen examples where you can run this on a really expensive machine that has a lot of redundancy built in. So talk to me about these different scenarios.
I will. So maybe what I can start by saying is the failure recovery model. And that's where you can have a machine that's pretty much a common machine, doesn't have to be a very necessarily expensive machine, and that it runs various VMs. And those VMs can have different software running in them, and then they can be backed up to another computer. And so if the first machine fails, so you have two machines that are identical with VMs on them, and those VMs can be replicated. In a minute, we can talk about the different types of replication. But the idea is that if the first machine should fail, the second machine comes over and it allows you to recover from that failure of the first machine. And so that's one, I like to call it deployment models. So Kirk, I'm going to say that may not necessarily be an industry term, but it's a dub term at least. So I don't know if that helps or not. So that's one model. But then there's another platform, another type, which is billed as failure prevention. And one such solution is Stratus's FT server. And that's where you have a single rack frame that has two completely redundant computer systems in it. They're called CRUs. And I've forgotten now, it's CRU, and there's some cute initials for what that stands for. But now I've forgotten, maybe it's customer removable unit or something like that. But these CRUs are basically independent blades that are synchronized, and they synchronize themselves automatically. And so, what is billed here is its failure prevention, where there's no failover. These machines are running. These are two machines that are running simultaneously, and they're constantly synced. So therefore, if they go through a common backplane. So if there is a failure of one of the crews, the other one is just switched online, and it's super instantaneous. And so that's a solution that Wide Orbit supports. I know that ENCO also supports it, and it's a hardware-based solution, and it's really, really slick. But it also comes at a price point that may not be appropriate for everyone. So the other model is where you have this failure recovery, where you have two different computers, and they're not necessarily synced in real time, where the RAM and everything is synced in real time like it is with FT server. These have a slightly longer failover time needed, but they are much more cost effective.
Gotcha. So this would be more ordinary server type hardware.
Yes, sir.
Give me an example of how many radio stations you might run in a single virtual a single piece of hardware running, you know, X number of virtual machines. What's reasonable?
A lot of it has to do with it's going to be very based on your automation platform and based on your audio platform. So for example, if you're using traditional audio cards, your limit might be the number of audio cards that you can get in the machine. And then you would divide that audio, a number of outputs available to that audio card, to that aggregation of audio cards, divide them by radio stations. Or if you're using an audio over IP platform, such as Axia or Weaknet or Dante, you would want to work with those respective manufacturers to say, I'm going to have this many NICs in the machine, and how many outputs can I expect how many outputs will your platform support on this many NICs? And then you would say, okay, if I get X outputs from available into my Axio, Wheatnet, or Dante network, that will allow my operation to run X radio stations, assuming that I want four outputs per radio station, for example. So, for example, if you get a quote from a manufacturer of an audio system that says, we recommend no more than 24 stereo channels on a NIC, and your virtual machine has two NICs, and you have one NIC available to... can I back up and start again? I apologize. I didn't explain that in the clearest way. So let's take an example where you have where you say your hardware can run four VMs, and you have four NICs available. So you would, if you have four NICs available, we'd recommend four VMs, and then if the audio over IP driver allows 24 channels per NIC, then and you have four outputs per radio station, then that's six radio stations per VM, and then you would multiply that up to 24 radio stations in a single computer, and that's pretty significant.
Yeah, it is.
You could save yourself a lot of computers by that based on that, and that's just assuming that there are radio stations where you're actually having control rooms that you want to where you need four outputs. Most people don't have that many radio stations in one plant, obviously, and so you would instead have production rooms and voice tracking studios and rooms like that where the demand for audio outputs, ins and outs, is much lower. So it really becomes practical to start imagining all of your automation computers being reduced to one or two computers, depending on the level of backup that you want. In a plant, that can be very helpful for cost savings.
Okay, so maybe clear up one little point of confusion for me. So I've got a server running several virtual machines, and I've seen servers that may indeed have four physical network interfaces on the back, so the four RJ45s on the back. And does a virtual machine environment allow you to have more than one IP address per NIC? or is it strictly one IP address per NIC?
It's as I understand it, it's one IP address per NIC. However, I'm going to be honest and say I don't actually know the answer to that. We've never tried it, at least at Wide Orbit. So I'm going to say that I don't know for a fact that a given NIC can have a given IP address for VM1, Virtual Machine 1, and a different IP address for VM2. That's not something that we have tried. We at least at Wide Orbit, we tend to be a little conservative with stuff like that. So
yeah, okay.
I apologize.
Well, we'll figure that out. And if I need to figure it out, I'm sure I'll figure it out. Because think about it this way: even a given operating system, Windows, for example, even on Windows, you can have more than one. Can you have more than one IP address on a NIC? Okay. We'll figure that out when the time comes. Maybe somebody smarter than me
will. And they would be smarter than me as well. So,
so now we have this virtual machine with the hypervisor. That's the software that is touching the metal, if you will, right? On the server. And then onto that, we can put, some number of operating systems. The hypervisor doles out the huge CPU power available on this on the server class machine to each operating system as needed or as decided that it's going to be needed or going to get.
Yes, sir.
And then in each OS, in each instance of OS, we're typically running one instance of your automation system. Is that right?
Yes. And again, that would vary by manufacturer, but at least in the case of Wide Orbit, you run one instance of the automation system, and then it would support the number of radio stations that you've desired for, to run in that VM that you want. So like in the example we took where your audio system supported 24 streams, in that example, you'd run a single instance of an automation system that's capable of running four radio stations each with four outputs.
Okay.
Five radio stations each with four outputs. Sorry, my math was a little sideways there for a second.
So I guess I'm on the downside. Look at my radio stations in Mississippi. We're running individual workstations playing out, one for each station. And then in addition, we have one voice tracking machine or one production machine for each of our two control rooms. We only have two control rooms and four radio stations. And if we lose an on-air playout machine, well, we've lost that radio station. We do have a backup, an aux, that's capable of running any of the logs from any of the stations. And all the commercials and line, all the audio is on a server. So for us, that's our weak point. If we lose that server, at the moment, it's not G-hawing with the backup server, so we've got to get that fixed right away. But if we lose that server, we got four stations off the air. So why should I not be terribly concerned about the virtual machine environment if I somehow lose that? I've lost, four, six, or maybe 24 radio stations. You already addressed that to some degree, given the deployment scenarios, but maybe from a practical point of view, is that something I should really, really worry about or plan for, I guess I should say?
I think it is. So we've kind of talked a little bit about the benefits of virtualization. So if you like, maybe we could look at the part that's not always great, the downsides. And one of them is you really would want to have some sort of backup because if you are putting everything in one computer, then you clearly have a single point of failure in that computer. And that can be mitigated to some degree with redundant power supplies and other things that can help that computer have uptime. And this would take a moment. If you like, I can take a moment here to go back to the FT server solution. Because we talked about how that's one giant computer with these crews in them, which are kept in real-time synchronization. And so what's the recommended deployment for that is it, of course, has redundant power supplies. And so what is recommended is that you feed those redundant power supplies from different power sources.
Bakers. Yeah, a lot of big facilities tend to have two different power sources, but at least on two different UPSs. Maybe you got your main UPS. We'll have a little backup UPS and have the other power supply into that one.
Absolutely. Okay. And that's right. so that's something to keep in mind. One of the other things, if we could talk about FT server benefits at the moment, is since it is two computers where the entire computer is synchronized in real time, it's an instantaneous failover to the backup. And once you repair that machine, you can schedule the time that it will go back to the main and resynchronize itself. And that's beneficial because at least when you're running wide orbit on it, and I don't see how it'd be different with any other vendor. When you go back to the main, it takes about 3 or 4 seconds to resynchronize. And so that means that your on-air presentation is interrupted for that 3 to 4 seconds, which isn't the end of the world when you consider what's happened. But it takes, you can schedule that so it happens maybe in the middle of the night or at least not in morning drive or something like that so that you have a little bit of control over it. So that's another benefit of the FT server. So we've talked about kind of the failure of the FT server. You need to have redundant power supplies. But the FT server does give you on the downside is it's everything is in one place. So for example, if the sprinklers go off or there's some catastrophe at the building level, you are in trouble. But that's that's going to happen to you even without FT server. So in my opinion, it doesn't bring a significant risk. So now let's take a look at your particular stations where you have many computers. Each computer has a dedicated role and it gives you a level of redundancy. And so there's something to be said for that. And especially if you are that may be the best option if you need to keep the cost of your system at a certain price point, especially if you don't have a very complex operation. For example, if you have an operation like you said, it may well be best for you to keep multiple computers because it actually might be cheaper. Because when you are virtualizing, you still have to buy a copy of Windows for each virtual machine, just like you would for each desktop machine, and you have to buy the virtualization software. Which could be, which can be a significant expense. For example, I believe the list price of VMware can go up to is in the 4-digit range, sometimes around $5,000. So that can sometimes pay. You know, you could buy if you only need 2 or 3 computers. Those computers aren't going to cost you that amount of money. So so those are some things to keep in mind about virtualization. The other thing that I would say is. If you're virtualizing, you need to have some sort of backup, as we said. And there are a couple of ways that could happen. It could either be a software solution, or it could be a software solution from your automation vendor, or it could be a software solution from your VM vendor. And so let's maybe we can look at both of those. So, for example, if you are running the wide orbit automation system, our automation system has automatic failover to a backup instance of Windows. So you could have two computers, whether they're virtualized or not, where the main computer is running your radio station and the backup is ready to take over if there should be a failure of the main. And that's that backup recovery. Recovery scenario, the failure recovery scenario versus the failure prevention scenario. So that could happen with, all major automation systems offer that. And so you could install two instances of that automation system on two different computers, and that will give you the ability to have protection in the event that the main computer fails, and that's separate from virtualization. But there are other solutions as well. For example, some of the virtual VM platforms like VMware offers a replicator feature where you can have two computers running VMware and all of your VMs are backed up to the other computer, but there's about a 2-minute failover to the other computer. So it's almost as good as what FT server provides, but it isn't quite as good because the failover time is longer. With FT server, there's really no failover to speak of. You know, it's instantaneous. with the replicator solution, there is a longer period of time for it to fail over, but it's at a more effective cost point. So, yeah. So that's another way that it can work. So it really just depends on what your needs are and what your budget is, and I think to a degree what your size is, to decide what makes sense for a given station. I know that I think all the automation vendors, the larger ones at least, I know, have staff who can walk you through evaluating your needs and establishing what hardware solution might be best for your application.
Sounds like the recovery method with the little bit of off-air time. The off-air time is just about the length of time of a typical short Beatles song.
Yes.
So you could cover.
A Beatles CD. I don't know if anyone still has CDs. You could have Beatles accessible somehow and have it ready to go. Yes, you could. So sure, that's right. Sure. So.
This been a really good and thorough explanation of this, and I feel like I'm a lot smarter with this now. I never feel like I'm completely smart on something until I really get my hands on it, and then I find out how much I really don't know.
I'm the same really way, and there's a lot to know, for sure.
I think Chris Tobin may be online with us right now. Chris, are you there, sir?
I hope so. Can you hear me now?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you hear me now? All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can hear you.
Good to see you here.
There's a brown building behind you.
It's just a skyline here in Newark, New Jersey. I decided to do the outdoor as Kirk is doing as well. It's a beautiful day today.
Very nice.
Yeah.
It looks like it.
You've got the weather there in New Jersey that we had here in Gatlinburg yesterday. Beautiful blue sky and puffy fair weather cumulus clouds.
Absolutely. Dubbed on the back of your, behind you on the camera, you have a CCBE clock and placard. Is that correct?
That is, in fact, correct. CCBE is one of my favorite events, and I pretty much attend every year, and I've given a number of presentations there through the years. So we'll have to, if you're there this September, we'll have to shake hands.
I'm there every year, and I have the clock and a plaque as well. So that's why I'm just saying.
Awesome.
It's a great event. It's a great event to be at.
It really is.
The hospitality suites are the best. Oh, did I say that? Sorry.
They are, in fact, hey guys, and our favorite events.
Hey, I want to get Chris's take on virtual machines here in just a minute. We've got a break for our sponsor, Broadcast Supply Worldwide. So we're going to do that right now. BSWUSA.com. That's the website where you want to go. And you know, what rock have you been hiding under if you don't know about BSWUSA.com? Everybody loves their catalogs. Go to the website, BSWUSA.com. Sign up to get the catalogs. Still good old-fashioned mail catalogs, paper you can look at. You can make that your Christmas wish list. You can have it there for reference. They're just terrific mailings that they do. But online, let's look at what's happening in June. Here we are in June. Well, it's 54% off, up to 54% off during their summer clearance sale, and they've got some deals going on right now, like the BSW exclusive processor, Orbin's Optimod 5500i. That's a dual-input, five-band processor with ultra-low latency and a full-featured RDS, RBDS generator built in a 1RU package. Says online, the price is too low to show because, you know, a lot of manufacturers have a minimum advertised price. Well, why don't you call the folks at BSW or just put it in your shopping cart and the price will show up there too. Another item is this MXL microphone, a dynamic mic from MXL. It is a $30 price drop. It's just $159. So that is a beautiful, good-looking mic and a built-in 12-foot XLR cable too. Also, there is a Tascam US32 Mini Studio. That audio interface is specially designed for internet broadcasting, offering great sound quality and lots of unique real-time effects. If you're into that, you can save another $40 by using promo code 40, all uppercase, when you check out. That's the Tascam US32. Now they got codec packs on sale at BSWUSA.com. You can save almost $1,300 on the Tyline VIA portable codec bundle. You get the portable VIA codec, two pairs of Shure Audio-Technica Sennheiser AKG or Beyerdynamic headsets with installed connectors and a rugged Gator utility bag. Plus, they got a great deal on Shure's BRH50M broadcast headset. That's lightweight comfort and great audio quality The mic has a very focused polar pattern with clear voice reproduction. It's only $399. Lots more deals. Check it out online. I'll put the link in the show notes, or you can just go to bswusa.com and look for their summer clearance sale where you're saving up to 54% off. Thanks a lot, BSW, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. I appreciate it, and I know your customers do too. Remember, BSW USA can ship things out that you order as late as 7 p.m. Eastern Time because they have a warehouse in the Eastern Time Zone right next to an airport near Columbus, Ohio, and they have some fabulous pickers and packers working there late every night to get stuff out to you. So if you've, oh my gosh, I've got to have by tomorrow or 2 days or whatever you need, well, if it's in their warehouse, and that is their warehouse, then they can get it out to you out the door and in your hands the next day. Check it out, bswusa.com, and thanks for being a sponsor. All right, we're here with Chris Tobin's been able to join us. We'll give Chris a quickie introduction. Chris is the engineer of record for a jazz station in Newark, Newark Public Radio in New Jersey, and he's also a consultant and has done just about everything before everybody else did it. Well, welcome in, Chris. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's been great. It's actually a time. We're doing a lot of recordings, a lot of jazz stuff going on this year. But to answer the question of the virtualization, we're actually using it in the studios, in the control room, so that when people do crazy things on the computers, they go totally belly up, we just blow out the virtualization and come back with a new problem and back to work. Don't have to rebuild a machine or crazy. So that's our use of it. I don't use it for automation at the moment. Yeah, but it's a great way to avoid when you have bad stuff happen, or nefarious activities on a computer in a studio at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you're like, really? Really? You had to go there. So we just clean up.
We did.
We just care of the virtual box, so the virtual machine, off it goes. We come back with a new set, and within minutes, we're up and running. So that's how we handle it.
And that is another that is another feature. In fact, that's something we look at doing with our sales department demos, is making them as virtual machines. And then, you know, if we take them out in the field and they go sideways, just to Chris's point, you know, you got everyone touching them and changing them, we can reset them back to how they are supposed to be. And that's another nice benefit of virtualization.
So does that involve having an image of the, does that involve having an image of the way you want it somewhere on the hard drive? You tell it, hey, go restore from that.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. And Chris may have another deployment strategy for that, but that's certainly one way to do it. Or you don't have to, or you can have it stored offline as well.
Ah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
We do both. We have an image, we store it offline. It all depends. We don't go too crazy. It's just in the studios. But I have used a virtual approach on a couple of remote or outside broadcast setups, which makes total sense. Yes. It's the best way to go.
It's great.
Dub, we spent a good deal of time on the virtual machine subject. We were going to talk about remote automation control, a la what the BBC has done with their Vylor project. But I'd kind of like to skip on to the notion of cloud automation and your thoughts on that and where that might be going, because we've only got about 10 minutes or so left in the show. Well, in time for a tip after our last spot break. In fact, you want to be thinking about a tip that people can take home and use, maybe a piece of software or a website that's really cool that you like to tell folks about. Hey, let me let you in on a secret. Go here and do this, and it works great. So why don't we talk about virtualization, not on your premises, but somewhere else, where in a data center or an Amazon Web Services machine, something like that. Where are you standing? What are your thoughts on the future for radio stations to not have much of any hardware in their station? Is there a future there?
I think there is. I think that there are a couple of different ways it can be done. Like in the case of what you said with the BBC, they have. The automation system is in the back end of the automation system is in a data center or some other location, and just the control point is in the local market. And then there is the case where the mixing console is in the local market or the surface, but it's controlling a mix engine, which is in the data center with the automation system. And that's a very interesting, idea, and it's something that we see the industry moving toward, albeit slowly. But then the assumption is that you still have your standard transmitter and you need to have some really good connectivity between the data center where all the magic is happening and the transmitter, which may be potentially thousands of miles away. Sure. And so that's very interesting, but it's a little different than everything being in the cloud. Well, in that regard, everything is in the cloud, but it's all in the customer's own infrastructure. But we believe that we'll move toward an opportunity for that to be outsourced as well, where a vendor can supply, and not necessarily an automation company, but a vendor can supply just that, where there's a data center with an automation system running and an audio over IP technology such as Axia, Wheatstone, or SAS running in the background, running in the data center as well, where all that magic happens there. And then there are just different contribution points from anywhere. And as I said, I think that's definitely something that the industry is moving toward and in time we'll arrive at. And as I said, when we were chatting earlier today, I personally feel that if the main studio rule is in fact eliminated, it will accelerate that trend. It's already possible, but I think that this would be a catalyst for that trend. Just based on the conversations that we're having, I think that's definitely something that could where the industry could go eventually.
Chris will want to chime in on this, but one of the fears over running your automation in the cloud is, well, then you're depending on the internet not only for contribution, which contribution doesn't always have to be real time, but play out to a transmitter site that does have to be real time. And we've kind of talked about this on previous shows where different companies, different technologies are getting the ability to shoot either compressed audio, obviously, or a data-reduced multiplex stereo FM signal over the internet. And toot the horn of the folks at Omnia for a second, that Hans von Zutphen, who's been on the show talking about this, has – this method where 320 kilobits per second carries a near perfect, he would probably tell you it is perfect, FM multiplex signal from any server that's got the software running on it out to a transmitter site that has either a hardware device that we come up with later or a Raspberry Pi or a computer that decodes this and turns it right back into an actual analog MPX signal. And they're adding fault correction and redundancy to this setup right now. So eventually, you have two internet feeds to your transmitter site and two at your data center, wherever that is. You could conceivably have a very reliable FM multiplex signal. Your processing and stereo generator actually is at the data center. And then this decoder and regenerator is at the transmitter site. And as an engineer, that is something that I could get comfortable with. And I could also be happy about not having just bukus of cheap computers at my radio stations, all of them, every now and then crying for a new hard drive or new RAM or new fans. We know all those things are going to die.
All those things happen.
So,
So you're exactly right. Oh, I apologize, Kirk. I didn't mean to interrupt, but you're exactly right. And you're talking about what's available today. As we look 5 years down the road, I would imagine it would be even better. And so, and as I said, I think that's the time frame that, that we'll be migrating toward this kind of application more and more. And these are the kinds of inventions that make it possible.
Hey, it just occurred to me we wanted to hit one more item real quickly before we have to scoot, and that is wide orbit version 4, because in this version you guys are not only planning for have virtualization involved, but you've got some features that I think you said that even smaller stations might appreciate in wide orbit version 4. Can you hit on that for a minute?
That's correct. Those are the features that really support everything we've been talking about today, because that's really where we see the industry going is through even greater centralization and failover and support for this kind of functionality. And so it also offers support for all of the virtualization failover scenarios that we talked about earlier, including one where the automation vendor provides the failover solution or where it's a hardware solution. So, and also for the centralization that we talked about. So those are really a lot of the things that that we're doing to support where we see the industry going over time.
Okay. All right. Cool. Hey, Chris Tobin, did you have some thoughts on this notion of cloud automation systems? I think you and me may have talked about this before. It's a wish of mine. What do you think?
Oh, no, I totally agree. It's something you can look into. I had to change locations. My natural light moved in the sky, so I'm now doing the big news promo type thing. Coming up this evening, we have the following. No, I think if radio stations are smart about it, and when I say smart about how they do their programming and content creation, yes, the data center is a good place to have your distribution, your virtualization, because it then allows you to actually pick and choose anywhere in the globe your place for creating content. So you could actually do live or pre-recorded or whatever you'd like. The trick is, I've always felt, is do you have the infrastructure in place to protect you for fault tolerance? And that's the key. Be willing to spend the money for the fault tolerance, as Doug pointed out, that if you do it right, you're protected. You could do an FT server, you could do the other approach and have a 2-minute window between or more. That's what I would say. I think it'd make great sense. Digigram has got their product called Blue, which is a service, software as a service, and it allows you to literally have a mixing console in a cloud. So you could literally I could be here on the rooftop and I could be controlling the mixer while I've got 5 other virtual connections from around the globe and we're producing a show. I think the trick is workflow, look at it that way. And as you pointed out, Kirk, with the MPX over data, over IP, I could have my generate everything at a data center or two and have connectivity that I know is fault tolerant. It's backed up and I'm on the air. And if all else fails, I have a local failover point inside my transmitted building. Maybe what I'm doing is keeping copies in real time of what I'm automating, what I have in the cloud. So if I have to, all else fails, everything gets cut off, I'm self-sufficient to transmit. Generator kicks in, local audio is playing, and I have time to get there and we can come up with an alternate plan. I think that's what it gives us the opportunity. And as Doug pointed out, this is today's technology. This is just now looking at it, wide orbits approach and how everybody else is doing it. It's just the beginning. So I see a lot of potential, but I see also imagination has to come into play. But I could be totally wrong.
Yeah. Hey, we're going to have to take one more quick break. When we come back, both Dub Irvin and Chris Tobin will have a tip for something that's worthwhile to take away that you can say, yeah, glad I listened to that show. I'll show them. So, our show this week in Radio Tech, episode 351, is brought to you in part by my friends at Lavo. Go to lavo.com/twert. Be sure you put the slash twert on there. Give us a little credit. And plus, it'll take you right to the site that you want to go to anyway. So lavo.com/twert. And you're going to find out about Lavo's radio consoles. They're radio and on-air consoles designed to support you in the creation, preparation, and broadcast of your radio programs. Quick, efficient, intuitive work guaranteed. Plus, they have virtual radio. Lavo software adapts to your workflow. It's easy, fast, and smooth with ideally matching components. And they're always there when you need. And the stuff that's never in the way, like their auto mix feature and the automatic level control. You can do a whole talk show and just have it mix itself. It really works intuitively and really well. Also lets you the program, host or producer, maybe you're running the board as well, lets you focus on getting things going like phone calls, like remote guests coming in, things like that. Plus, they have routing systems at Lavo. Really terrific routing systems, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Their routing systems, they can run on Ravenna, as Lavo is a big proponent of Ravenna. Which also is AES-67 compatible. Plus, then they have virtual radio, like their new Relay product. Check that out. It's all on the same website. And at the NAB show, Lavo introduced a new audio console, the Ruby. They want you to know it's a whole new way of thinking about radio workflow, where physical and on-screen multi-touch controls combine to give on-air talent a revolutionary way to create. Check it out if you would. At Lavo, lawo.com/twert. It'll take you right to the page that talks about all the stuff that I'm talking about here. Really innovative products. And you know that Lavo is famous for incredible uptime. When you're doing a live event like the World, the America's Cup, the Olympics. You're doing a BBC program. You can't go off the air. No, it's just not no good. So Lavo is German engineered and really, really well built, well designed. Lavo.com/twert. Thanks a lot, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we got a couple of tips for you. Chris, do you want to take it first? Give us your tip of the week.
Sure, since we're talking virtualization and computer service and all that stuff, imaging, make images of your drives. Critical, mission critical stuff, as well as the ordinary day-to-day stuff. I just recently changed out a drive on a Mac Mini in a production studio because it was failing, physically failing, so I put an SSD in. Great thing was I had a clone of it. I did an incremental backup of the moments before I was about to swap it out. And then a half hour later, my studio's up and running and everything is great. So, you know, think about it. If you've got systems in the plant and you're relying a lot on computers, which I'm sure we all are, do the imaging, do the clones. You know, if you have a Mac, it's, Carbon Copy Cloner. And then there's all these other ones for Windows OS type and Linux. Definitely consider it. It's important. Something that if you don't, if you overlook it, you'll be in trouble. And the wind is picking up here. Look at that.
It sure is. Looks like you're in a windstorm there, dude. Hope you stay on the roof. Dub Irvin has been our guest from Wide Orbit. Dub, would you like to pass along a tip to our viewers and listeners?
Yes, I think I would. If you're interested in playing with virtualization, just so you understand it a little bit, there is a free one that's available, which is called VirtualBox. So if you go to virtualbox.org, you can run it on a Mac, run it on Windows, run it on Linux, and then the guest operating systems can be Windows or some other ones as well. So if you want to kind of get your hands in it and maybe play around, virtualbox.org might be a great place to get started.
Nice choice. I use that.
Yeah. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Hey, Chris, you mentioned disk imaging software. Is there disk imaging software for Windows that you might recommend or prefer?
Oh, goodness.
I know there's a lot of them.
Two of them that I used to use. There's a lot of them. Kronos, comes that's old.
Sure.
I don't recall the ones I have now. I totally forgot. I should have. I just thought of it, too. Darn
it's, hey, well, you're on a roof. You're on a rooftop.
I'm on a rooftop. Yeah,
if you could just make a recommendation by email, I'll put it in the show notes. That would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Appreciate it. All right, that's going to do it. It's going to wrap this show up at 6 minutes after the hour. We've gone for just about an hour here. And, I've had a blast doing this from the cabin in East Tennessee. Dub Irvin, thank you for being with us on This Week in Radio Tech. It's great to spend an hour with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I enjoyed it greatly as well. And, again, just thank you very much.
And we'll put your Wide Orbit website in the show notes as well, so folks can go look
at that.
Also, I'll have a link to FT Server. Fault tolerant. That's what the FT part stands for. FT Server. Fault tolerant.
Yes, sir.
And Chris Tobin, thank you for joining us from a roof in Newark, New Jersey. Amazing.
Yes, absolutely. Taking advantage of the outside. Why not? Hey, by the way, if those of you are viewing, and when you do get to hear this, because it'll be gone the next couple of months, don't forget the Convex World Tour. All talking about IP and getting content from anywhere in the world. So virtualize the facility, try their products, and before you know it, you'll be doing all kinds of crazy stuff for making money.
You sent me some pictures. I'm sorry we didn't get to them, but maybe we can. You know what, Chris? We're probably gonna have a show with just you and me, just shooting the breeze for an hour. So we'll stick it in there, and that might be this coming. It might be next week. I'll look at the calendar.
That's fine. Well, yeah, Chris Krupp and Tom Hart, they were like, "Wow, I probably should be on the show again." I said, "Well, we'll have to see about that."
I'd love to have either one of them. And the one time we had Tom Hartnett on, I couldn't be here. You hosted the show, so I missed out on the show live. So,
oh yeah,
but we should try to. Get
we
Tom
had a great time.
Again. Good deal.
Yeah, no, they've got some. We talked a bit. They had some good stuff coming down the pike. So this couple of good time to try and tap them.
All right. Good deal. We got to run. I want to thank our sponsors, Lavo at lavo.com/twert. Also, bswusa.com and the TELUS Alliance with the new Omnia Volt. It's an amazing audio processor. Check them all out. Appreciate your patronage of our sponsors very much. Thanks very much to Suncast, always working hard to bring everybody in and do the video switching of the show and producing it after we're done with the live version. Thank you very much, Suncast. And also Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. We got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.